Maxwell House Coffee presents Good News of 1940.
Edward Arnold bidding you welcome to another hour of good news, brought to you each week by the makers of Maxwell House Coffee, and starring Fanny Bryce, Hadley Stafford, William Gargan, Connie Boswell, Benny Rubin, and Meredith Wilson and his orchestra. In addition, we have with us this evening Mr. Warren William and Eric Blore, stars of the new Columbia thriller, The Lone Wolf Strikes, and Miss Iris Meredith, a charming Columbia starlet who will appear with Mr. William and Mr. Blore in a preview of the picture. And now we open the program with a song from Walt Disney's marvelous production of Pinocchio, An Actor's Life for Me. Our entire cast will join in, and are you prepared, Snooks?
Prepared.
All right, Meredith, let's go. The grass is always greener in the other fella's yard. No matter what your life may be, you think your life is hard. If we could pick and choose, and nature wasn't a factor, here's a bit of news, I'd pick the life of an actor. Hi, diddly-dee, an actor's life for me. A high silk hat and silver cane, a watch of gold with a diamond chain. Hi, diddly-dee, Meredith, what would you like to be?
Hi, diddly-deet, I'd rather act than eat. A Barrymore nose and a Gable physique. For leading ladies, I'd take my choice and sing to her with a Crosby voice.
Hi, diddly-dee, Snooks, what would you like to be?
Work in a candy store with butterscotch and jelly beans and chocolate drops and lemon drops and fat and sticky lollipops.
Hi, diddly-dee. Daddy, what would you like to be? Hi, diddly-ding. In opera, I will sing. From Figaro to Pagliacci, from Don Jose in Velvet Knees, I turn to Mephistopheles. Hi, diddly-dee. What would you like to be, Connie?
Hi, diddly-daddle. Give me my boots and saddle. I'll ride the range and brand the cows. Tell the dogies to get along while I sing a western song.
Hi, diddly-dee. Goggin, what would you like to be? Hi, diddly-doll. It's me for Carnegie Hall. There I conduct each Thursday night a Handel Gavotte and a symphony for three piccolos and a timpani. Hi, diddly-dee. Warren, what would you like to be?
Oh, boy. Hi, diddly-dot. I'll be your coffee pot. I'll daily warm my little insides with something you purchase in every shop. The coffee that's good to the very last drop.
Hi, diddly-boo. Whatever you want to do.
Snooks can have her candy store.
Daddy, his opera's by the score.
Connie can ride on the range in glee.
While Gargan calls for his fiddler three.
Let Wilson Hamlet with lots of ham.
While Warren's selling the coffee, what am?
We promise never to make a fuss. An actor's life for us.
Well, we got through that one all right. Nothing can stop us now. A little later on in the program, ladies and gentlemen, you're going to hear a preview of The Lone Wolf Strikes. In the preview, you will hear Miss Iris Meredith. But now I want you to meet her in person. Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Iris Meredith.
Thank you, Mr. Arnold. Good evening, everybody.
What's this?
My heavens, he's awake. What's the matter, Meredith?
I beg your pardon?
Are you talking to me?
Now, wait a minute. We've got our wires crossed here. Miss Meredith, this is Meredith.
How do you do?
Well, I'm fine, but I'm all confused. Is this a rib?
No. Meredith, may I ask you to acknowledge the introduction and then be on your way?
Pray do. But holy tizzy, is your name really Meredith?
Yes, is your name Meredith, too?
Well, that's what they call me. Maybe we're cousins.
I don't think so, Mr. Wilson. My name is Meredith, but I'm Iris.
Well, my name is Meredith, but I'm Scotch. That's quite a coincidence, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Sure is.
Yes.
I seem to run into a lot of coincidences. I guess I'm just lucky. Only last month, a fellow came up to me right out of a clear sky, and he told me how he knew my uncle back in Mason City. Things like that kind of scare you.
I should think they would.
Listen, Meredith. Miss Meredith is here to take part in a preview of The Lone Wolf Strikes.
What's that?
That's the name of a picture, The Lone Wolf Strikes.
Gee, now I'm really dizzy.
What's the matter?
Another coincidence. Would you believe it? When I was a kid in high school, I was known as the Lone Wolf.
Well. Meredith, would you like to hear about another coincidence?
I doubt if I can stand it, Ed.
Well, you can try anyway. Connie Boswell has made lots of phonograph records. But one of the biggest sellers is a swing version of Ma Paris from the opera Martha. And that's the song most of Connie's fans have written in to ask her to sing on the air. Now, isn't that a coincidence?
It sure is.
All right, you play it and we let Connie sing it. And we let Miss Iris Meredith just enjoy it. Connie?
The future seemed to loom, till her clear, brilliant sphere knew with light dispel the gloom. Oh, she fled, quickly said, all my joy in fleeting gleam, as I wake, hope forsake, robbing me of all my dreams, of all my dreams. Oh, ah, so pure, ah, so bright, burns her beauty on my sight. Oh, so mild, so divine, she beguiles all of mine.
Martha, 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 Martha.
Can't thou leave me thus forsaken? Come and share thy boon with me. Share thy boon with me, yeah, with me. Ah, so pure, ah, so bright, burst her beauty on my sight. Oh, so mild, so divine, guileless heart of mine. Martha, Martha, thou hast taken every bliss away with thee. Canst thou leave me thus forsaken? Come and share thy boon with me. Share thy boon with me. Boom with me.
Splendid, Connie, splendid. That was fine. That was grand.
The accompaniment okay, Ed?
Oh, I should say it's okay. Now, seriously, Meredith, I think it's about time I paid you a very sincere tribute.
Oh.
You know, I think your orchestra is tops. And your music, well, it's better than ever.
Gee, thanks, Eddie. Matter of fact, you took the words right out of my mouth. Only, I was going to say them to Warren Hull about Maxwell House coffee. And Warren, I guess I'm not the only one who thinks Maxwell House is better than ever before.
No, indeed, Meredith. As a matter of fact, more and more people every day are finding greater enjoyment in Maxwell House than any coffee they've ever known. You see, friends, we found a way to blend Maxwell House to a new perfection of flavor, a full-bodied mellow flavor that comes from very special coffees. Highland-grown coffees from remote and fertile plantations of Central and South America, with a rare goodness unlike any other coffees in the world. And then, to bring out the true, natural goodness of this matchless new blend, we've developed a remarkable process called Radiant Roast, a process which uses uniform, penetrating heat to roast each coffee bean evenly all the way through. Now, this way, there's no chance of weak coffee from under-roasting or bitter coffee from parched coffee beans. All the mellow, satisfying flavor of this superb new blend is brought to its peak in every cup you serve. And that's why today, more people are enjoying Maxwell House coffee than ever before in its history. Why more stores sell Maxwell House than any other coffee in America. So if you haven't tried Maxwell House lately, ask for a pound tomorrow, won't you? Compare it with what you now think is good coffee. We'd like you to know what true pleasure and satisfaction there is in this rich, deeply satisfying coffee that's now, more than ever, good to the last drop.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Fanny Bryce's Baby Snooks. Earlier this evening, Daddy, played by Hanley Stafford, sent Snooks to the store with a dollar to buy him a newspaper. 2 hours have passed, and the child hasn't returned. As the scene opens, Daddy is on the telephone trying to locate Snooks. Listen.
Hello.
Hello.
Is this Grundy's Candy Store?
Yes, sir. Grundy speaking.
This is Mr. Higgins. I sent my daughter down
for... Oh, yes. She just left here, Mr. Higgins. Treated a flock of kids to ice cream sodas.
Oh, she did. Did she pay for them?
Yes. Said you gave her a dollar for her birthday.
That's fine. Thanks very much, Grundy. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
So, that's where she's been with my dollar. Wait till I get my hands on her. Snooks! Snooks, is that you?
I don't think so, Daddy.
Come in here.
I have to put my blocks away.
I'll put your blocks away.
Why?
Snooks, look at me. Take a good look at me.
You look awful.
Never mind that. I gave you a dollar to go and buy me an evening paper. Where's my paper?
Huh?
Where's my paper?
It fell in the mud.
Mud?
Yeah.
There's no mud in the street. It hasn't rained for over a week.
No?
No.
Oh, dry, ain't it?
Very. Now, how did the paper fall in the mud?
I found a puddle and I fell in it.
Oh, I see. Well, how come your clothes aren't wet?
The sun dried them.
Since when does the sun come out after 6 o'clock at night?
Is it after six?
Yes.
Then I gotta go to bed. Good night.
No, you don't. Wait. I'm going to get to the bottom of this. Now, what did you do with my dollar? What are you yelling about?
I didn't buy no ice cream.
Who said you bought ice cream? All I know is I sent you for an evening paper.
Is that all you know, Daddy?
Until you confess the rest. All right, Snooks. You came home without the paper. I presume you have my dollar?
I presume so.
Well, where is it?
I ain't got it.
Snooks, is it possible that you came home without the paper and without the dollar, too? Could that be?
Could be.
I see. Well, I'm not going to bandy words with you any longer. Now I want to hear the truth from your own lips. What did you do with that money?
I swallowed it.
I told you I want the truth. Now, why didn't you go to buy the paper in the first place?
They didn't have no papers in the first place.
Oh, no?
No, so I went to the second place.
Go on.
And I tried to buy the paper, Dad. But they grabbed the dollar.
Who grabbed the dollar?
The three burglars.
What three burglars?
What'd you say, Daddy?
You said three burglars grabbed the dollar. Well, I'm waiting.
I'm thinking, Daddy.
Oh, brother, I never heard a story like this.
It's good, ain't it?
No. Now, what about those three burglars?
Well, one came from the back, and one came from the top. And then one...
Oh, stop it. You can't make me believe any excuse about three burglars.
Oh. Will you believe it about two burglars?
No.
One burglar?
No burglars. I won't listen to anything about burglars.
Are you scared of burglars, Daddy?
Oh, Snooks, I've had enough of this.
Me too, goodbye.
Don't you dare leave this room. This is a very serious matter. And I want the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Comprehend?
Copperhead.
All right. Now, what happened to my dollar? Remember the truth.
All right.
Well?
An elephant sniffed it up his trunk.
Oh, an elephant. Where did you meet this elephant?
He followed me to the store.
I see. And why would an elephant follow you to the store?
I didn't ask him.
Maybe he was going to a Republican convention.
Uh-huh, that's right.
All right. So an elephant followed you to the store and sniffed the dollar up his trunk.
You believe it, Daddy?
Oh, sure. I believe that stuff about the three burglars, too.
Then why are you taking off your belt?
Because there's a patrol wagon in my pants. I'll stop yelling. And go on with your fantastic story. Now, what happened when the elephant sniffed the dollar up his nose?
I think he sneezed.
Oh, he sneezed?
Yes. And he threw me right into an ice cream parlor.
Aha! Now we're getting to the truth. All right, Snooks. You can drop your subterfuge.
Can't you spank me with them on?
I mean, you didn't tell any more lies. You went to the ice cream parlor with a flock of kids, didn't you?
Uh-huh.
And you bought 10 ice cream sodas.
Uh-huh.
And you all drank them.
No, I drank them all.
What about the other kids?
They watched.
Snooks, do you mean to tell me you guzzled 10 ice cream sodas all by yourself?
I only guzzle mine.
What about the other one?
I just gargled it.
What a child. A female Tony Galento.
Can I go now, Daddy?
No, I'm not through with you. Why did you go to such great trouble to make up those awful fibs?
It wasn't no trouble.
And to think it should happen on this day of all days.
It's the only day you gave me a dollar.
I'm not talking about that. You know what day this is?
Dollar Day.
No. It happens to be George Washington's birthday.
Is he going to have a party?
Snooks. George Washington is the man who never told a lie.
Why?
Because he believed in the truth. When his father asked him who chopped down the cherry tree, he said, I can't tell a lie, Pop. I did it.
Did Popeye do it?
No,
Popeye didn't do it. George did it.
Then why did they blame it on Popeye?
He didn't blame it on anybody. He confessed that he did it himself.
Who did?
George Washington.
Who's he?
Oh, don't tell me you've never heard of George Washington.
Why?
Don't you learn anything at that broken-down school?
Ain't it awful?
I can't believe this. Oh, Snooks, you must have heard of him. Who was our first president?
Columbus.
No, it was Washington. George Washington. That's the first thing you learn, the names of our presidents. The first president was Washington, the second was Adams, and the third was... the third president... You mean you tell me you never heard of Washington? Snooks, you've seen that wonderful picture, Spirit of 76?
No, I ain't.
You have to. One man is carrying a five...
And one is playing the drum?
That's right.
And the other one has a headache?
No, that's a bandage. He's wounded, fighting for George Washington and our glorious country. And you picked a day to tell the most abominable string of untruths I've ever heard. Snooks, I'm ashamed of you.
I'm sorry, Dad.
Well, I've simply got to punish you. It's going to be a very painful lesson for you. I know it'll upset Mother, and I don't want you to think I'll get any pleasure from it. But I must spank you.
Well, if it's going to make everybody feel bad, let's call it off.
Oh, no. After tonight, you'll remember to tell the truth. Then you'll be sure to get your reward in the end.
That's where I always get it.
Turn over, Snooks. Here we go again.
Well, Daddy, it gets harder and harder to keep up with Snooks every day, doesn't it? But, you know, I suspect you're not the only parent to have a child like Snooks at home. In fact, I'm sure of it. Now, how about it, ladies and gentlemen? Do I hear a chorus of agreement from you fathers and mothers sitting at home by your radios? Well, we're going to give you a voice in this program, an opportunity to tell us just what your darlings, the darlings next door, may be saying or doing to amuse or annoy you, an opportunity that may bring you $100. We'll tell you more about it later on in the program. Right now, another of Meredith Wilson's spectacular arrangements. With the assistance of Benny Rubin, the orchestra, and our Maxwell House chorus, Meredith brings you the love song of Rinaldo.
What do you say?
Where do you come from, Rinaldo?
Who, me? Oh, I come from San Pedro.
And where do you live in San Pedro?
I live in a house by the bay.
Si, si.
Si, si.
Padre. He lives in a house by the bay. And where are you going, Rinaldo?
I go to Las Vegas.
And what do you do in Las Vegas?
I meet my Raquel and I say,
oh-oh,
oh-oh,
oh-oh.
Si, si, my pigeon, I love you so.
And what do you bring her, Rinaldo?
I bring her a rose for her hair, a ring for her finger to wear.
Then where do you take her, Rinaldo?
I take her to San Pedro.
And where will she live in San Pedro?
In my little house by the bay.
Hey, 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 hey.
In my little house by the bay.
Lovely.
And what do you bring her, Rinaldo?
I bring a guitar and a song. Oh. And sing to her heart all night long.
Then what do you do in the morning?
Like I told you, I take her to San Pedro.
And where will she live in San Pedro?
Same place, in my little house by the bay.
While Rinaldo he fishes, he washes the dishes in his little house by the bay.
But I catch no fishes, so she throw the dishes. Raquel, why do you want the fishes, eh? Oh, you want the fishes for the scales.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, that man of many voices, the Jekyll and Hyde of culture, Mr. William H. for Harvard Gargan.
Thank you, Edward. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. But if you'll forgive me for saying so, I think you're being a little tiresome about my accent.
Well, what do you mean?
In plain English, you're dragging the thing past the laundry.
Yeah, that's the Gargan I like to hear.
That's the Gargan I'd like to forget. You see, all of my normal thinking is done in very high-class phrases. But if I talked that way to Reuben, he wouldn't understand me.
I see.
When I converse with Benny, I go through a process of self-interpretation.
Oh, and you mean when in Rome you
exactly.
Do that?
Exactly. Uh-huh. When I talk to Reuben, I talk intelligently, but strictly these, those, and them.
Yes.
See? When I talk to Wilson, well, doesn't matter what I say as long as I sound like a flute.
I get it. And how do you talk to me?
Well, then I use my stomach tone.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good one, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I don't think it is.
Oh, see.
There's one thing I'd like to know. Oh. Do you actually pal around with that fellow Reuben?
Certainly he pals. We stick together like Damon and Runyon.
Pythias, Benjamin. Damon and Pythias.
Thanks, Bill. Hey, Mr. Arnold, you got something against me?
Now, don't be silly, Benny. I think you're as nice as they come, but you come too often.
That's a double entendre if I ever heard one.
On the contrary, I find your conversation with Bill very enlightening.
Well, it won't do you a bit of harm to listen, Edward, old boy.
Yeah, I think you're right. I'm getting out of here.
You know, he ain't a bad guy as fat guys go.
No, but I'm glad he went.
Hey, I'll tell you what I come by for, Bill. I want you should drop over to the house tonight. We're having a little soiree.
Oh, a racket, huh?
Yeah. The entertainment will be string quartet with bingo on the side. 10 cents a card.
Say, reserve 3 cards for me.
Oh, gee, that'll be swell.
Uh-oh, wait a minute. I better ask the ball and chain.
You're going to miss us?
Certainly.
Well. Say, when we was back home, used you go with Michael Fleming?
Sure I used. Say, use you?
Yeah, I use. But you was the one was nuts about her, wasn't you, huh?
Yeah, but I got over that.
How?
I married her.
Oh.
Give me that phone.
Here. Look, Bill, why don't you bring Michael along?
Well, I'll ask her.
Hello?
Hello, baby doll. This is Billy Boy.
Oh. What's the idea of putting your dirty shirt in the drawer with my clean undies?
Oh, it's just a slip, honey.
And
I
another thing, Bill Gorgon. Next time you get your own breakfast, don't make such a racket. I couldn't sleep a wink till after you was gone.
Yes, well, I was...
What did you eat for breakfast anyway?
Walnuts. I was cracking them with a hammer. Listen, honey,
Did you feed the dog before you left?
Yeah, I give him the shells. Honey Bunch, I want to ask you something.
I want to ask you something, and believe me, you better have a good answer.
Gee, Bill, she must have got out of the wrong side of the bed this morning.
Not her. She ain't even up yet.
Oh.
What's the matter, honey?
Plenty. The phone's been ringing all day about the one you pinned on last night at the Raps party.
I didn't do nothing.
Wasn't bad enough you drinking that rum punch like it was lemonade.
Yes, good.
Getting into a fight with the host. But you didn't have to make love to that blonde dame from Pittsburgh.
Oh, she wasn't
Don't
from Pittsburgh.
Don't tell me. While we was all playing murder in the dining room, you was playing post office in the kitchen.
Listen, honey, I was
And
drinking...
another thing. Maybe you don't remember, but around 2 o'clock in the morning, you was doing a fan dance on the lawn.
Uh-oh. Oh, honey, if you'll just
Who
let me...
Who do you think you are? Gypsy Rose Gorgon?
Gee whiz, honey,
I
was
only... I'm sick and tired of you making yourself the laughing stock of the whole neighborhood, you big clown. And I ain't clowning.
Well...
And you needn't come home for dinner tonight because you won't find me there.
Listen, honey, I...
Go ahead, talk, Bill. It's your turn.
Listen, honey, I'm sorry if I've been a bad boy, and I want to make amends.
Keep punching.
Well, you know what? My friend Benny Rubin is throwing a little shindig.
That no good, Bum.
Huh?
You heard me.
Wait a minute, honey. You got Benny all wrong. This is going to be a nice, quiet, high-class little party with chamber music and bingo. And I thought we could... Hello?
Well?
I'm sorry, Benny, but Mrs. Gorgon regrets that owing to a previous engagement, she will be unable.
I am indeed sorry to hear this.
Thanks. You know, Benny, women is a puzzle.
Yeah.
Yeah. The way I got it figured, marriage is like a lottery.
No, it ain't, Bill. When you're losing a lottery, you can tear up the ticket.
Benny... You never told me. Are you married?
No, but I got a girl. I've been going steady for 4 years.
4 years?
Yeah.
How come you ain't married?
Well, it's like this. We reached an impasse on account of glasses.
Oh, drinking, eh?
Oh, no. I never touched the stuff. I'm referring to spectacles.
Oh, enlighten me.
Well, she thinks I got weak eyes, so she made me buy some glasses.
Yeah.
I buy the glasses, but I won't wear them.
Continue.
Well, she won't marry me unless I wear the glasses, but whenever I put on the glasses, I don't want to marry her.
It's a good idea. Gee. You're showing great perspicacity there.
Thanks.
Yes, sir. If you give in beforehand, you're a dead pigeon after. Now, take me and Moitel. When we got married, we had a distinct understanding.
Yeah, I just heard it.
Oh, she ain't always like that. We get along fine, Benny, because... You know, we made a rule that she would decide all the little things that come up, and I would handle all the big things.
That sounds good. How's the wake?
Well, it would be fine, except for one factor.
What's that?
So far, no big things have come up.
Oh.
But every dog has his day.
You said it, Bill. Come on, let's go out and get a cup of coffee.
Yeah, and I'll tell you about it.
Right now, that wonderful fragrance of freshly brewed Maxwell House in the air tells me the moment has arrived.
Mr. Arnold.
Just a moment, Snooks. The moment has arrived for our famous Thursday evening custom, and
Mr.
I would...
Mr. Arnold.
Please, Snooks, if you don't mind. Our Thursday evening custom, a moment of relaxation over a steaming, fragrant cup of Maxwell House coffee.
Mr. Arnold.
What is it, Snooks? What is it?
saved me the last drop.
Oh. Certainly, Snooks. And friends, wherever you are, all over the country, pull up your chairs and join us right now, won't you? In a cup of the coffee that's good to the last drop. Now, Warren, if you're ready to pour the coffee, I'll ask Meredith to pour out the music that goes with it, eh?
We pause briefly for station identification.
This is Edward Arnold again, ladies and gentlemen. We continue our Good News Maxwell House program with a special preview of Columbia's new picture, The Lone Wolf Strikes, starring Warren William with Eric Blore and Joan Perry. In our radio version tonight, you will hear Warren William playing his original part as the Lone Wolf and Eric Blore as his butler, Jameson, and Miss Iris Meredith, the young Columbia starlet, who will portray the part originally played by Joan Perry. The adaptation of this Columbia screenplay was written by Robert Riley Crutcher. And now, Meredith, if you will ring up the curtain, The Lone Wolf Strikes.
It is with some hesitation that I introduce myself as Michael Lanyard. I have so many names. You may have met me as William Brown or Jack Smith or even heard of me as the Lone Wolf. But that title belongs to the past, to the days when I took pride in the craftsmanship of my profession. I was a thief. But since then, I have reformed and retired into quiet respectability. True, there are times when I'm glad I haven't lost my skill entirely. In fact, there are times when my appetite for adventure is whetted more keenly than ever. For example, I'd like to tell you the story of two murders. The guilty person of the first murder is obvious, but in the second murder, well, I'll come to that later. The story begins one evening when Stanley Young of the Young and Jordan Investment Corporation called at my apartment. I was working in the aquarium with Jameson, my valet. Look, Jameson, fungus is forming on the killer again.
Oh, very well, sir. I'll go draw his bath. Does seem a lot of trouble for just a fish.
Just a fish? You call that finny beauty just a fish? Are you out of your mind, Jameson?
If I am, sir, it's because I'm jolly well fed up being a gentleman's gentleman to a lot of sardines.
Sardines?
Well, this isn't like you, sir. I miss the excitement of the chase. Life was thrilling in the old days. We were always on the go. The police just a half step behind us, their hot breath on our necks.
Now, Jameson.
Ah, forgive me, sir, but it grieves me to see you so domestic. Don't you miss the old life, the people we used to meet? Excuse me, sir. Mr. Stanley Young, sir.
Hello, Stanley. How are you?
Fine, Mike, fine.
It's swell to see you. That's all, Jameson.
Very good, sir. Finny beauty. A fish.
Well, Stanley, what have you been doing with yourself? Here, sit down, have a drink, and what's the matter?
Mike, I need your help.
Certainly. How much?
$250,000.
Certainly. Eh? I beg your pardon?
Well, I'm not joking, Mike.
Well, I don't carry quite that much on me.
You can get it.
How?
I have a pearl necklace with me. Yeah. Take a look at it.
Real?
No, a young lady named Benny Weldon has the real ones. She stole them from my partner, Philip Jordan. I can't prove she stole them, but I know she did. I have to get them back.
And you want me to...
Yes, Mike, I do.
Sorry, no more of that for me. I've retired.
I haven't told you the whole story, Mike. It's not just the pearls, it's what happened to my partner, Jordan.
Yes, I read about it last week. Nasty accident.
It wasn't an accident. It was murder.
So, Stanley told me how Jordan had made a fool of himself over this girl, Binny Weldon. The necklace had belonged to his wife before she died and was to be given to his daughter whenever she married. But one night he let Binny wear the pearls to the opera. And though he was with her every minute, somehow she managed to switch them. He discovered it as he was about to replace them in the safe. He telephoned Binny immediately.
But, Philip, there must be some mistake.
Jordan told her he wanted to avoid a scandal, and he'd give her a chance to return them.
Why, how dare you? You know perfectly well that I would...
Jordan said he would be at her apartment in an hour to get them. It was a long drive back into town, and he was hitting 65 when suddenly another car darted out from a dark road and swerved into his. Philip Jordan was dead.
You see, Mike, I can't prove anything. But with your help...
Stanley, you don't understand. There are lots of good agencies you could contact.
Oh, it isn't just for me. It's his daughter. She's been living abroad now that she's home.
But, Stanley...
Mike, I hate to remind you of a promise you once made when I...
When you helped me out. Sorry I hesitated, Stanley. I am at your service.
Thanks. I knew you'd say that. I brought Delia Jordan, Philip's daughter, with me. She may have some ideas.
First, I think we should hire 5 or 6 private detectives to watch Benny Weldon. Get men you can trust, because we don't want any publicity.
Well, that's fine, Delia. But suppose we give Mr. Lanyard a chance to think over the situation.
Really, I don't see anything wrong with my ideas. I think we can make much better progress working together on this, don't you, Mr. Lanyard?
I'm afraid I'd be out of character, Miss Jordan. You see, I'm the lone wolf. Benny Weldon was asleep in her apartment dark when I raised the window and slipped into the room. Swiftly and methodically, I searched the panels of the walls and behind pictures and books for a hidden safe. Nothing. There was no alternative. Benny would have to find the necklace for me. I took a vase from the table and smashed it on the floor. Then I stepped behind the curtain and flattened myself against the wall. Suddenly, the apartment was flooded with light. Benny stood in the doorway, a gun in her hand.
Who's there?
She looked out of the window, then rushed back to the telephone. I could see her glancing uneasily around the room as she waited for an answer.
Hello? Hello, Jim.
She explained what had happened.
I'm sure there was someone here, Jim. They must have thought I had the necklace. Oh, no, no, I wasn't dreaming. Vases don't get knocked over in a dream. Oh, Jim, I'm afraid. Well, when is Golic going to arrive? Wednesday? I know. I'll give him the biggest party he ever heard of. But I won't rest until he gets out of town with those pearls.
So, Emil Golic is in on this. It isn't going to be as easy as I thought. And who is this Jim that had the necklace? Was he the one that killed Philip Jordan? And how could I prove it? Well, there was nothing to do but wait until Golic arrived. I returned home that night to find Delia, who bombarded me with questions.
Did you get them?
What?
You were in Benny Weldon's apartment, weren't you?
How did... Jameson.
I couldn't help myself. Miss Jordan's like a vampire, sir. She fairly wormed it out of me. I hope you understand, sir.
Only too well, Jameson. Only too well.
Thank you, sir. Then if you'll excuse me, sir, I think I should be doing something else somewhere else. Thank you, sir.
Did you get them?
No, she didn't have them.
Are you certain?
Quite.
Well, then where are they?
A friend of hers, someone named Jim, is taking care of them.
She told you that?
Not exactly. I overheard a telephone conversation.
About what?
They're waiting for a man named Golic, a famous fence, to get here from Europe. They hope to sell the pearls to him.
Good.
I'm glad you approve.
What do we do next?
We?
Of course.
As soon as we finish your coffee, we're going to take you home. Then I'm going to get a good night's sleep.
Hello.
Well, it's been nice not seeing you for a couple of days.
Has it? I haven't even heard from you. So far as I know, you haven't done a thing.
There hasn't been anything to do.
What about that man Golic who's going to buy the necklace? He arrives today. Aren't you even going to see him?
Benny Weldon is giving a party for him, and one can't very well go to a party uninvited, Delia. Very bad form.
Oh, stop talking to me as though I were a child. I have a right to know your plans, if you have any, which I doubt. You seem to think...
I think you're getting yourself needlessly upset. Why don't you run on home and let me worry about things?
I won't leave here until I know exactly what you're going to do.
In that case, you'll be staying. Jameson?
Yes, sir?
Entertain our guest while I'm gone. Show her our fish. I'm sure they'll interest her.
This way, miss.
Oh, you and your fish.
I beg your pardon, miss. They're not my fish. I loathe fish.
Jameson,
Where's he going?
That I can't tell you, Miss Jordan. But from Mr. Lanyard's manner today, I imagine he's out on the chase once more. Oh, I only wish I were with him. It should be a glorious night. Glorious.
Should it, Jameson? Why?
Well, I'm only judging from the past, Miss Jordan. But every time Mr. Lanyard has met Emil Gorlick, there's been a lovely mix-up. Lovely.
I went to see Gorlick at his hotel. He was a particularly dangerous man, and I had pulled so many tricks on him in the past that he was suspicious of my visit. But by selling him a diamond pin at a fraction of its value and telling him I had stolen it, I put him off guard. He warmed up, and we laughed about old times.
Those parties. Oh, those parties.
I'm going to one tonight, Gorlick, and you're going with me.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mike.
There'll be lots of nice girls.
Yeah? No. I can't, Mike. Some other night, maybe. Tonight, I must refuse.
Oh, that's too bad, Gorlick. I especially wanted you to meet these two people who are giving the party. They're artists like ourselves. They do very lovely work, too. Well, you'll have to meet them before you leave. Binnie Weldon and Jim...
Binnie Weldon and Jim Ryder?
Ryder, that's it, Ryder.
Ah, that's where I'm going tonight, to their party.
Really? Now, isn't that a coincidence? Well, then, we're in for a great treat tonight. They're a grand pair, aren't they?
I'm glad to hear it. I've never met them.
You never met... Gorlick, that's all I wanted to know.
Mark, let me go. What is it? Let me go, Mark. Let me go.
I very apologetically tied and gagged Gorlick. Then, borrowing his eyeglass and accent, I myself became Emil Gorlick and went to the party. But I wouldn't have felt so much at ease if I had known that Delia had followed me to Gorlick's hotel, and that while snooping around outside his room, she had been instrumental in releasing him. No, I was very pleased with myself and thought him safely out of the way. After the introductions were over, I spent some time with the guests, because Gorlick, of course, would have stayed with the girls, and after all, I was acting the role of Gorlick. But I should have gone into the other room and seen the pearls as soon as Jim asked me. Because when I did...
Here they are. Just like I said they were, aren't they, Mr. Gorlick?
Yeah, yeah. Dear McNivell.
Then you'll buy them?
I take them. It will not be so easy, but... I take them.
Benny, see what's the matter out there.
I tell you, I am Emil Gorlick.
What do you mean? This man here is Gorlick.
Him? Him? He is the lone wolf.
Turn on the lights, quick. He's got the necklace.
Here he goes. Get him.
I returned the pearls to Stanley at his home, and he gave me the imitations for my collection. I thought the adventure was over, but when I returned to my apartment, the telephone was ringing. It was Binnie Weldon.
I don't know what you plan to do with the pearls, Mr. Lanyard, but if you hope to see them around Miss Jordan's neck, I'm afraid you're going to be horribly disappointed.
She told me they had Delia Jordan, a prisoner there, that Gorlick had brought her. I didn't believe her until I heard Delia's voice.
Please, please don't. You're breaking my arm.
They wanted the pearls back immediately, but I had only the imitations. I decided to take a chance. The phonies had fooled me when Stanley first showed them to me, so I went back to Binnie Weldon's and released Delia by palming off the imitation pearls. Then I took Delia to Stanley's home, where she could get the real necklace. But we found Stanley dead and the necklace gone. The police were there and arrested me for his murder. But I didn't kill him, you know that. You were with me all the time. Who did kill him? Everyone except me had an alibi. Binnie Weldon and Jim Ryder had been waiting for me at their apartment. Gorlick didn't even know Stanley. Delia would hardly kill the man who was helping her, and besides, the pearls belonged to her. Who killed him? This is what might have happened.
You admit you were the last one to see him.
But I didn't kill him.
We have only your word.
Delia.
And what does your word mean? Everyone knows you're a crook.
Delia, you said you trusted me.
But this has changed everything. If you didn't kill him, who did? Can you tell me that?
Yes, I know who killed him. But just let's start at the beginning. Binnie Weldon stole a string of pearls from Philip Jordan, whose daughter was living and studying at a school on the continent. His partner, trying to recover them, knew Jordan had been murdered. And to avoid scandal for his partner's daughter, he didn't notify the police. He came to me. Binnie Weldon and Jim Ryder meant to get both Stanley and me out of the way by killing Stanley and throwing the blame on me.
But they couldn't have murdered him. They were waiting for you in their apartment.
I know. They had an accomplice, a third person. I first suspected it this afternoon. She knew too much about the arrival of Emil Gorlick.
She?
So I immediately sent a cable to the school in Europe where Delia Jordan was studying. They answered that she had been in the hospital there since her father's death. This girl knew that Stanley had never seen Delia Jordan, so it was easy to pose as Delia in order to keep check on my moves for Weldon and Ryder. You're not Delia Jordan, and you murdered Stanley.
Wait a minute, Warren. You don't mean to tell me that in the picture that sweet little girl actually murdered Stanley?
Well, no. In the picture version, Delia really was Delia.
Well, confidentially, Warren, who did kill Stanley in the picture?
I don't know. I haven't seen it yet.
Oh. Good night, Eddie.
Good night, Warren. Good night.
Well, anyway, bravo, Warren William, and a couple of huzzas for Eric Blow and Iris Meredith. I'm sure we'll all want to see the picture, which will soon play our local theaters. Now, a Western ballad sung for us as only our own Connie Boswell can sing a Western ballad. Tumbling Weeds. Connie?
See them tumbling down, wedging their love to the ground. Lonely but free, I'll be found. Drifting along with a tumbling tumbleweed. Fears of the past are behind. Nowhere to go but I'll find. Just where the trail will wind. Tumbling along with a tumble tumbleweed. I know when night has gone that a new world's born at dawn. So I'll keep rolling along. Deep in my heart is a song. Here on the range I belong. Drifting along with a tumbling tumbleweed.
Tumbling tumbleweed.
I'm a roaming cowboy.
I'll lift up my saddle.
Riding all day long.
With my lonesome saddle.
Tumbleweeds around me.
All of them.
Sing their lonely song.
In their funny way.
Nights underneath the prairie moon.
That's where I love to wander.
I ride alone and sing a tune.
Singing way up yonder.
I keep rolling along. Deep in my heart is a song. The range I belong, drifting along with a tumbling tumbleweed, drifting along, drifting along with a tumbling.
Thank you, Connie. That was fine. Now our scene, a grocery store with Bill Gargan as the grocer. Snooks and Daddy enter.
Now, Snooks, don't get into any mischief. I've got to go over here to the canned goods section.
I want a canned goods, Daddy.
You behave yourself. I'll be right back.
Well, young lady, what can I do for you?
You can give me a bunch of those cookies.
Well, you certainly have nice manners.
You like them?
No, I don't. If you want cookies, there's a proper way to ask for them.
How?
I'll show you. You come behind the counter and take my place with the grocer.
All right.
Now, here's how you ask. Excuse me, I've been admiring those cookies you have on display, but I haven't any money. If I'm not imposing upon you too much, would you be good enough to let me have one for nothing, please, sir?
You can have more, little girl, and here's a $40 to go to the movie.
Get away from that cash register! What's going on here?
I didn't do nothing.
Oh, is this your child, sir?
Yes, what's wrong?
Yeah, what's wrong?
Nothing. Except you might teach her how to say please.
And you might learn how to mind your own business.
Suck him, Daddy.
You keep quiet.
I don't mean to be disrespectful, sir, but I'm quite sure you wouldn't like it if you heard how she asked for a handful of cookies.
Oh. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, she gets out of hand sometimes. Snooks, why didn't you ask this man nicely for cookies?
Because he's a big dope.
You hear that, Snooks? What do you mean by saying the grocer's a big dope? Say you're sorry. Go on, say you're sorry.
I'm sorry, he's a big dope.
Oh, let it go.
Come with me, young lady. I'll attend to you at home.
Well, here comes another customer. Eddie Arnold, what can I do for you, sir? How would you like some nice coffee? We're selling it at bargain prices today.
Well, I'm always interested in a real bargain. But from what Warren Hull tells me, coffee, imperfectly protected from air, can lose so much of its flavor and goodness that, well, it isn't a bargain at any price.
Well, that's right, friends. So if you want all the coffee flavor you pay for at the grocer's, beware of coffee that has stood on its shelves for a day or more in ordinary containers, imperfectly protected from air. Just remember, air steals away coffee flavor. All coffee, ground or in the whole bean, starts to lose flavor as soon as it's roasted, if exposed to the air. In fact, ground coffee, packed in ordinary containers where air can easily reach it, loses as much as 45%, nearly half its precious flavor, in only 9 days.
Ah, but Maxwell House coffee, that's a different story, isn't it, Warren?
You said it, Eddie. Yes, friends, we think too much of this superb new Maxwell House blend to let one bit of its wonderful flavor and goodness escape. That's just why we take Maxwell House, still fresh and fragrant from the roasting ovens, and pack it in the familiar blue super vacuum can. No air can get in, so no flavor can get out. Maxwell House comes right into your kitchen with a full measure of fresh flavor and fragrance sealed in, none wasted. So if you want more flavor per cup and more cups of full-flavored coffee per pound, ask for Maxwell House, won't you? Remember, with Maxwell House, you're getting coffee that's not just days fresh, but roaster fresh. And no coffee can be fresher than that.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's the opportunity I promised you earlier in the program. The opportunity to prove that Snooks' daddy isn't the only parent to have trouble keeping up with his children. 2 weeks from tonight, March 7th, the bright saying or doing of somebody's child will be acted out by Snooks and Daddy. On Good News, maybe it'll be your contribution. All you have to do is to send us a letter describing an amusing incident that may have happened in your own home or the home of a friend. An incident that might have happened to baby Snooks, for instance. $100 will be paid for the bright saying dramatized by Snooks and Daddy on March the 7th. Address your letter to simply Baby Snooks, Hollywood, California. She'll in turn will turn over your suggestion to a committee of judges, including Dick Powell, Meredith Wilson, Fanny Bryce herself. Just to give you a hint as to the kind of bright saying which might bring you $100, Snooks and her daddy will act out an example now. Daddy has brought his boss home for dinner.
Well, boss, here she is, my daughter. Cute, isn't she?
So this is Snooks. How do you do, young lady?
She's always a little backward with strangers, but she's a very bright girl. Best speller in her class at school. Spell something for Mr. Williams.
No.
Oh, come on. Spell cat.
C-A-T.
Smart, isn't she? Takes after her father. Try her on a harder one.
All right. Try this one, Snooks. Straight.
S-T-R-A-I-G-H-T.
Well, that's very good.
Oh, you think that's good? Just listen to this. Snooks, T tell Mr. Williams what straight means.
Without ginger ale.
Just like a father, huh?
Ah, what's the use?
Don't forget, the bright saying of your child or a child you know may bring you $100. Simply send a letter addressed to Baby Snooks, Hollywood, California. Don't worry about fancy writing. Don't try to dramatize. Just send the story in your own words. It will be judged on its humor alone, and if it is selected, we'll do the rest. The bright saying selected will be acted out by Snooks and Daddy on the Good News program 2 weeks from tonight, March 7th. The decisions of the judges, Dick Powell, Meredith Wilson, and Fanny Bryce herself, will be final. In case of duplicate letters, the one with the earliest postmark will get the award. All entries become the property of Maxwell House Coffee. So don't delay. All letters must be postmarked no later than midnight, Friday, March 1st. Remember, simply mail your bright saying to Baby Snooks, Hollywood, California.
For over 2 years on Good News, we have made it a custom to honor beloved melodies in the concert hall. Tonight's presentation is once again selected from the world of musical comedy, music that has stood the test of time. Meredith Wilson and his orchestra present selections from Emery Colman's famous operetta, Shari. Special guest, a young man I'm sure you'll be delighted to hear. My good friend, Dick Powell. It will be leap year day, so you can expect anything from Fanny Bryce as Baby Snooks with Hanley Stafford as Daddy, Connie Boswell, Bill Gargan, Benny Rubin, Meredith Wilson, and I'll be tagging along too. So let's make it a date for next Thursday. Until then, this is Edward Arnold bidding you all good night.
This is Warren Hull reminding you that leading grocers are now featuring Maxwell House coffee at new low prices. Prices the most modest budget can afford. Now more than ever is the time to make friends with Maxwell House. And now, good night and good luck from the makers of Maxwell House, the coffee that's now, more than ever, good to the last drop.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.